Blog Talk Radio.
I hope I'm on the air. This is Movie Geeks United, and the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, here they are, the nominees for this year's Academy Awards.
Flawless. Welcome to Movie Geeks United. This is the Oscar prediction show. Sorry about the technical difficulties at the start of the show if you guys experienced any of those. I am Jamie Duvall, and I'm here with my co-host, Jerry Dennis.
Hi.
Jerry, are you?
Okay. Yes, I'm here.
Good, the phone lines work. That's one. And also, we have a special additional panelist with us, the host of Oscar here on Blog Talk Radio, Mr. Jason O'Brien. Jason?
Did you not have a nice big intro for me or something? Or?
Sorry.
My God, man, he's all over the place this week, man. He went the special intro.
Yeah, well,
Jamie did that for me one year, and I had like the intro, the music intro, and everything. I mean, it was nice.
Yeah, I was so disappointing. I had a special intro planned actually for the show, and then Blog Talk Radio, the system that we're hosted on, decides to perform maintenance. Right at the top of the hour.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's wonderful. So now, I mean, I'm frozen. My switchboard is frozen.
Yeah, I'm not having.
I can't even get to the chat. It's just sitting there hanging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's try this. We have a packed show coming up,
yes.
And let's get right to it. We're going to do our first category now, since we're already running late. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio. Actually, our good friend, Bobby Osteen, is with us to examine our first category, which is Best Film Editing. An accomplished editor herself, Bobby has two stellar books that explore the art of editing, Cut to the Chase and The Invisible Cut. She recently moderated a conversation with legendary editor Carol Littleton at UCLA, which was preceded by a special screening of Lawrence Kasdan's classic Body Heat. And on February 10th, that's 1 week from tonight, she will be at Tribeca to moderate a special screening and discussion of Bob Altman's Gosford Park with that film's editor, Mr. Tim Squires. And I would love to put her on the line now, but my switchboard just disappeared.
I tell you.
Oh, God.
This show is good. Bobby, hang on. I'm going to bring you up. The show can only get better. I promise everyone out there.
It's because of me, isn't it? It's because I'm on the show.
It probably is. So now I have to wait for the switchboard to reappear, and it's slow loading because of the maintenance going on.
Did we talk amongst ourselves? Or
how are you guys doing?
Oh, you know. It's greatest, you know, if it's Wednesday night and there's not technical difficulties.
Always Wednesday night, yeah.
It's always, it must be Blog Talk Radio.
That's maintenance night at Blog Talk Radio.
Right.
Isn't every night maintenance night?
Well, yeah.
Well, it's hard for me to maintain a show when they're trying to maintain their site. So.
I know, yeah, it is hard. It's difficult.
Yeah.
I also want to say, you know how we normally have a mystery movie song of the show?
That wasn't either.
The switchboard is coming back up, and I'll bring Bobby on. This is terrible. But now we're doing a mystery movie score of the show, something that you will appreciate, Jason, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So that's something to look forward to at the end of the show. Okay. let's see if Bobby's on the line. Bobby, are you with us? Okay, it's not that line.
Next he's going to hang up on all of us.
I know, really?
Oh, yeah, I'm so sorry. Bobby, are you with us? Okay. Okay, we're not hearing anything from Bobby.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
If it's any way possible that Bobby might, if she can hear me, if she can hang up and call back in, and maybe that'll, you know, revive this line so I can bring it up. Now, I heard her hang up.
Only Bobby can save us.
And, of course, my switchboard, okay. Jerry...
Yeah.
Do you have the actual categories up? Or Jason?
Yeah, I do. I'm at therap.com. I have the categories up. So.
I've got them memorized.
Of course you do.
What do you want to start with? What do you want to? I don't.
Well, let's go through the nominees for editing while we try to get Bobby back on the phone here.
Okay. All right. For film editing, we have Avatar. Do you want me to give the editors, too, the names of the editors or just the films?
No. Just give the films.
Just the film editing. We have Avatar, District 9, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, and Precious.
Okay.
Yeah.
Say those one more time.
Avatar, District
you need to
9, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, and Precious.
Okay, so let's until I'm able to get her line up, let's talk
just
about
keep
this among.
Reading the names.
Yeah, just keep reading it.
Maybe you should have did the name.
We will. Let's discuss the merits of these, and then we'll bring Bobby on to discuss them as well. Actually, I think I can get her now. Hang on.
Oh, yay!
Keep your fingers crossed. Bobby, are you with us? It's such a cliffhanger.
It's such anticipation, you know?
Yeah,
hi, Bobby.
I heard her.
Hello?
Hi, Bobby.
Yay.
Hello?
Oh, God.
Hello?
Hello, Bobby.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
Okay, I have you on cell phone and landline. I was hedging my bets.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hey, well, hey, it's better either way, yeah. I mean.
Okay, I'm here. Hi.
Okay. Hi.
I've got a can of Progresso soup just to make sure.
let me check these lines here. Let me make sure I've got other live lines on here that I don't need.
Yeah, definitely.
Live line?
Yeah, because I can hear a guy speaking in the background. Okay, Bobby, are you still there?
On the phone?
I'm here.
No. Okay, good. I picked the right line.
Okay, good.
All right. Did you hear your intro, Bobby?
It was stellar.
Thank you.
Better than mine.
Something went right tonight. Jerry, I want to talk to you about your event, but Jerry was just, and there goes my switchboard again. Jerry was just going over the nominees for Best Film Editing. So maybe as a group, if we can go through the merits of these, and then I want to make sure I get the details of your event before this segment ends.
Right.
But Jerry, could you repeat them a third time?
Yes, certainly. Achievement in Film Editing, Avatar, District 9, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, and Precious.
Okay. So, Bobby, have you seen all of these films?
Yes, I have.
What is particularly striking to you out of these?
Well, I initially would want to talk about Avatar, and mm-hmm. I have to say that beyond what everybody feels, of course, it's a magical experience and history-making, and it's technology. But I also am very impressed with the editing. It's one of those projects, it's always true of editing, that you never really know what the editor did
mm-hmm.
because you don't know what the footage was and what the whole process was and how much control the editor had over the final cut and how much the editor actually got to do. And in this case, I think it's a difficult movie, particularly difficult because James Cameron is such a controlling force and it was such a complicated movie. But
mm-hmm.
I still think what was so interesting about it is in the past when they did 3D movies, there was a lot of deep focus. And you know how you would sort of glide and snake along and there were these long shots. And it was actually kind of an old-fashioned way to shoot. And you were very conscious of the composition and the relationship of the objects, you know, all the trickery of 3D and the
right.
foreground coming at you. But I felt that this movie really pulled you in so the gimmicks didn't get in the way, that you were really immersed in the experience. And I think some of that is because of the editing. I think the focus was on the movement rather than the relationship of the objects.
Mm-hmm.
It was cut like an action movie in the best possible way, you know, using multiple points of view and circling the object, keeping the camera loose, not being so conscious of the border and the framing. It was really beautifully realized. So with all that said, I still would give it to Hurt Locker.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to Hurt Locker.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
I mean, I just think it's just pure, unadorned, brilliant filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once again, you don't know how much the director had to do with the final version, but I just think the challenges of making that movie work and the, you know, the thrill and horror of violence and yet, and this sort of intimacy of the camera, and then, you know, there's a lot of very stylized things in that movie, a lot of zooming and a lot of handheld cameras that could be very, make you very aware of the surface and not pull you into the story. But I really think it does just the opposite. I think, you know, you're always, it's sort of like the bombs are always ticking and your heart is always ticking and the character's
right.
heart is always ticking. It's like you're always in it, you know?
Well, I heard a critics roundtable about the nominations last night on Charlie Rose, and someone brought up a good point about Hurt Locker. It's very tightly wound. It feels like the most exciting action movie of the year, even though it's so much more than, you know, quote unquote action. But there's also something about the way that Kathryn Bigelow shoots, and I'm sure this translates into the editing too.
Mm-hmm.
You always know if you see this character standing here and the other character standing there, you always know where they are in relation to each other. You always know their proximity to one another.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you're, even though you're always unsteady, you're
mm-hmm.
always solid. You know, it sounds like a contradiction, but you're always where you want to be at all times,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's unpredictable. It's like this weird duality that keeps it dynamic and keeps you grounded as an audience, which I think is what you're saying, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree with that. I think I like the editing in Avatar. Let's say like this, Avatar is a lot quicker than you
right.
think it's going to be given in length. But I actually have to say, it's really, for me, I think maybe District 9, The Hurt Locker, and perhaps Inglourious Basterds, because everything is tied up at the end of Inglourious Basterds. For a while there, you think you have five short films. You're almost watching, like, five short stories.
Right.
And then that fifth act, if you say, everything does come together. Maybe not in the way that we were raised that things come together, but certainly in Tarantino's world, they do. But I agree with you about The Hurt Locker, though. I think that may be the front runner here in this category.
I just think, you know, she took a genre and upended it in a way that was was beautiful. I just and I do not like war movies. I don't consider this a war movie. I consider this a character study.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it really is.
Yeah.
I mean, don't you love that line, "War is a drug," and it sets you up for this intoxication, you know, and you're horrified and intoxicated at the same time, and you're, you know, it's just, even the situation of Iraq and not being able to trust anybody and not knowing what's going to happen. And then she had these interesting scenes with the three of them alone, the three men alone, and this sort of homoerotic scene, you know, where they're fighting. And but even those scenes inside the vehicle, you know, which are very, very intimate. And they're you know, I think movies always have to, you have to have an ups and downs all the time. You can't have it always the same. And that is a little bit of my issue with District 9. It's like this unrelenting, agitated, energized, very well-made movie, but it never lets up, and you're exhausted, you know?
That's a good point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with Hurt Locker, you have peaks and valleys, you have quiet moments, and you have violent moments, and the tone is always shifting, but it's always right. You know, it flows, it's organic, it's not studied, it's natural, you know?
Jason, what do you think? Do you think Hurt Locker as well or not?
Well, speaking of Hurt Locker, I mean, I think if my personal choice would probably be the Hurt Locker because just talking about editing, it has one of my favorite edits of all. Because like one of the things about editing is how you can cut two images together and how striking that is, and none more so than the Hurt Locker when we go right from the battlefield to his home life.
Mm-hmm.
You know
that was a great transition.
Yeah, it was an amazing way of, you know, instantly going from, you know, the battle to all of a sudden now you're kind of jarred like, okay, what's happened? You know, is this a dream? And then you find out, okay, he's actually back home. But, I mean, I love movies that do something that bold to do a cut, you know, that really jars you at that particular point.
That's very well said because when it cuts to him at home, you're so used to seeing him in the war zone. All of a sudden, when he's at home, you feel the way he feels, which is ill at ease and kind of unacclimated.
And didn't you love the way they stayed in that supermarket for so long and let you picking the cereals, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
it just
that's where I thought it was going to be a dream. I thought there was a bomb going to explode or something
What I figured was he was because the way we go from the supermarket and then he's back at the front almost. It's kind of like I don't belong here. But also, if you want to say the one slight tinge of it is like, this is what I'm fighting for, cereal, I might as well just go home, go back where I feel at home. He's like sort of like Willard. He wasn't comfortable at home. He wasn't comfortable in the jungle. But in the end, he has to go back to the jungle.
It's amazing. It's so mundane, that setting, and yet you have so much tension because
you can't get ahead of it.
You know, like, what is he going to do? You know, he's screaming inside,
It's all that. Jamie said it real well about the choice, you know, how you are instantly seeing it through his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why it's such a character study instead of just a war film.
Yeah.
Because you said you get plenty. But I think Avatar is going to do a pretty strong sweep of the technical awards, and I just get this feeling that it's going to win film editing. My personal choice would be Hurt Locker, but I think Avatar will win it.
I think it's kind of 50-50 because
it's close.
It's just because it's kind of a show off piece for editing in a way. You know, it's that whole combination of sort of fiction and documentary and how they made it work. I think, you know what? I think they both deserve it. Really, I just think.
Isn't the enormity
apples and oranges, you know?
Yeah.
The enormity of the work that had to be done on Avatar, doesn't that kind of put it as a front runner for all the technical? I mean, even in terms of editing, how with all of these elements did you manage to make this coherent?
Right.
I know,
make it all
it's
come
true.
Together.
You know, it's true, and the pre-conceptualization that goes with even just CGI. Based movies, you know, there's so much that the editor is involved with that's a different kind of role, but it's in a way more difficult because I think you have to imagine things before they happen because it's done in stages. So I agree. I mean, it's I'm sure they did remarkable work on that movie. I think they're both great, you know.
Yeah.
They both get me very excited, really.
Well, I will go with Avatar just because I think that that's what will win. But I agree with you guys completely about the merits of Hurt Locker. Precious is like the oddball here, isn't it? Do you think it was nominated because it switches because of its switch in tone from the gritty real life to her kind of fantasies of where she
Probably.
Wants to be in life?
It might. The ending didn't stick out to me.
I know.
But
I mean, I was surprised too, frankly. But the only thing I could say for it in terms of editing is part of the editor's job is to make the most of a performance.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of inexperienced actors that gave amazing performances. So pulling the best out of, you don't really know what they had to work with, and these could have been the gems, and, you know, with Monique and the leading girls, and all the other actors, too. The performances were wonderful. I did find the fantasy seemed a little, it didn't seem that sophisticated to me, the way
yes.
it was done. I don't know if you agree with that.
If you think it was hackneyed, like very, like, almost run-of-the-mill kind of, like...
A little bit. Yeah. Did you think so, too? Or?
Yeah, I mean, the experience of watching Precious, it is a very brutal film. I know a lot of people have said it's like an after-school special, and I can see where they're coming from, but it is brutal. But, yeah, that part almost seems tacked on. It's like... It almost seems like a really bad stereotype, almost. This is the only thing that
well,
we think about.
I mean, the idea of being pulled into something and not thinking about it and it just being at one with the movie, I don't think that happened when they made those transitions. I think, like you said, you're like, what? And if it really is well conceived and well executed, you shouldn't have to go through that, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah. Well, if Precious is an after-school special, it's the hardcore version of The Blind Side's G-rated. It's a good comparison to The Blind Side, which is a G-rated after-school special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were talking about characters and their proximity to one another in relation to The Hurt Locker, but whenever I think of the work of Robert Altman, I think of that as well, because he's known for massive group scenes and lots of stuff going on, which had to be the hardest stuff to shoot and to edit as well. And that brings us to your event next week, where you're speaking to the editor of Gosford Park, among other films. Tell me about that event.
Well, what I did was originally the event at UCLA was based on what I did in my book, In the Invisible Cut, where I used frame grabs to show the actual cuts. And which is interesting, but not in itself. You have to have a context. So what I did was I then interviewed, in this case, Carol Littleton, showed her the cuts and said, talk about this, explain how you got to this point, what your challenges and problems were, because that's the only way you get the whole story. And this is my mission, is to explain the invisible art, and the only way you can do that is really talk to the masters, get inside their heads, and figure out what they went through. So in the case of Gosford Park, once again, we're going to run cut sequences, and Tim Squires is going to go back and forth over the actual cuts and explain what he did and what his challenges were. And this movie was a really quirky production. They had 55 days. Altman is a very – he lets the actors – have a lot of space and feel their characters and then come up with gems and then sort of shape it into something that then becomes his. And he says the best things that happen in his movie are accidents. But, of course, he's pulling the strings, but he's letting them go. So what the challenge for Tim Squires, which was a huge challenge, was that, for example, in a dinner table scene, instead of doing a traditional worrying about eye lines and, you know, close-ups, master shots, two shots. He didn't shoot that way at all. He would just have two cameras going at all times, and they were moving all the time. They were never still. And they just kind of, you know, pan back and dolly back and forth. And every take was different. Every take, an actor would be maybe in the shot, and then the next take, he wouldn't be in the shot, but he'd still be saying that line. And so Tim Squires has this very unique way of working. He's incredibly methodical and diligent, and he does many versions of a scene before he even starts cutting, which is nobody, I've never heard of anybody doing that. So in this case, it was especially useful because normally he'll cut a scene and cut all the close-ups together, then cut all the master shots together, cut all the two shots together, and never use that. Just have that in his head as a reference. So in this case, he would just cut versions, you know, and it was a complete puzzle because those versions didn't really go together. So if Altman would say, I like the first half of this, you know, I like the second half of this version, you couldn't really put them together. So he had to do a lot of sleight of hand, and Robert Altman called his work flawless. Mm. And he had very little footage because they only had 55 days. And the way he would shoot scenes, like a cocktail party scene, he would just light the entire room, have everybody individually mic'd, and just let them go and say, this is your character, this, you know what you have to do. And then Tim would have to kind of find needles in a haystack, you know. Mm-hmm. And he found, because he did all those versions, he found amazing things that he would have not necessarily found if he just cut a traditional way and just went through it in a linear fashion.
Well, so, we're crazy about Bob Altman on the show, so this event sounds right up our alley. But if our listeners want to read more about it and find out how to attend, can they go to your website, bobbyosteen.com?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you for the plug.
Right there on the homepage.
Yeah.
And I wish you the best of luck with it. If I was able to get up to New York, I would definitely be there.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought I saw Jerry did a maybe on this. Is that true, Jerry?
I did put a maybe. It was wishful thinking on my part, but I did put a maybe.
If only we ever got out of the house, we would.
If only my life, home life wasn't so crazy. Trust me, if I could get up there, I would. Because I have a brother who lives up there, but it's craziness down here.
Well,
I am
going to be filming this and integrating the footage that he's talking about with footage of us talking. So I'm going to archive this.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I am. You can see it.
Well, people are already asking about it in the chat room that live in the New York area, so I just gave out your website, and I wish you the best of luck with it. Keep us posted on it.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
Likewise.
Thank you, Bobby.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, we only have about 50 more categories to go. We have a call. I think it's New Jersey, or it could be the other line that Bobby had on.
Poland is listening. Chris, or Poland is listening in on the show on his phone. I think that's
on
it
his
is.
Phone. On his phone. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't pick.
Okay, he's just listening. Don't pick up. He says.
Okay. He just said don't pick up. Okay. I just muted him. Roland, we're going to hear from you in a little bit. I sent you an email. If you could wait till the end of the show, that would be great. So we can get through these categories. Okay. Let's go to art direction. The nominees are Avatar, The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, 9, Sherlock Holmes, and The Young Victoria. What do we think here, Jason?
Well, I still got to put this down for Avatar. I just get the sense that the Academy is going to sit down and just, you know, Avatar is such a technical achievement, and they're just going to mark off one after the other, art direction, you know, film editing. So, yeah, but I'm glad to see Dr. Parnassus in here. It's
I would love to see that. I mean, that or The Young Victoria, both art directions of both films are fantastic. But
yeah,
to be honest, when Avatar is just, I think, going to sweep every technical category, I mean, I think it's mm-hmm. unavoidable at this point. I just don't
Yeah, because I just
how.
Get the sense that, you know, because I won't give away my best picture prediction, but I just, you know, I think that the, you know, I think they're just going to say, okay, it deserves to get a good number of honors, so, you know, checking down the line.
But you have two other, like, I think really strong, you know, I think the mm-hmm. art direction and the costume design, everything in Victoria is wonderful, but Parnassus, I mean, it's Terry Gilliam, and rich visuals in that film, but I just don't see how they're going to, let's be honest, this Avatar is just going to steamroll all these categories. That would be the upset if it didn't.
Yeah.
With 9... 9 is essentially, for most of its running time, it is all set in the whatever the famous studio is.
Yeah.
Cinecittà. Yeah. But I'm glad to see it get nominated.
Yeah, these are all deserving nominees. Yeah,
I mean, Sherlock Holmes has some beautiful set pieces. There's no doubt about that. But I just don't. When you have something like you guys were talking about, just the editing of Avatar and just the painstaking process and everything, I just think this is like I said, this is going to be the thing that's going to eat up all those categories.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it any other way. Good or
as unfortunate as that is, because I think I think the editing in Hurt Locker is more innovative, and I don't know. I mean, art direction. I mean, Avatar did create an incredible world, so I can see it. Maybe deserving this a little bit more there, but
yeah. I mean, it's a tough one in some of these categories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will go with Avatar 2, and I can tell you all cared. Best achievement, best achievement in costume design. We have Bright Star, Coco after Chanel, before Chanel, right?
After Chanel, that's Cinemax.
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, 9, and The Young Victoria. Now, I will go first this time, because usually I would say give it to the costume drama, which there are a couple.
Yeah, you got two, yeah.
But seeing that one of these is intrinsically about fashion, I would say it's going to Coco before Chanel.
And that's a good choice. I would say that or Bright Star, because she, Abby Cornish's character, makes all of her own clothes, and that she is in a sense her own fashion designer, and there's a lot of beautiful costumes there. And I'd also say The Young Victoria, any of those. I mean, the costumes are fantastic.
Jason?
I think this goes to The Young Victoria. It got 3 nominations, so it's a spot that they can honor it.
Mm-hmm.
The costume dramas do tend to take it, so that, I don't know, that's the feeling I have right now.
And this is also a good costume drama. It's not...
No, sure, yeah.
It's a superb film, so...
And some thought Emily Blunt would get a Best Actress nomination, so I mean, it's...
That's an upset right there. That was a disappointment for me.
Yeah. So it's kind of a place that they can honor that film. You know, there's obviously some respect for it from the Academy, so I think it goes to The Young Victoria.
Okay. And I'm going for Coco before Chanel. And what did you say you're going for, Jerry?
I'm going to go with Young Victoria, but I'm like, all 3 of those are Bright Star, Coco before Chanel, and Young Victoria are all, the costumes are fantastic. But I'm going to go with the Young Victoria just because it's not represented in another category. It should be.
Mm-hmm.
Best achievement in makeup, El Divo. The Simon Cowell band?
Dude, El Divo is a wild choice. I'm so happy to see that there.
Is that there because of aging makeup?
I think yes.
Yeah.
And it's.
I looked up some pictures
and
see
that win. Really.
Yeah. Star Trek, The Young Victoria, and Jason's modeling headshot. Those are the 4 nominees.
Jason's modeling headshot. I didn't see that.
Realistic aging makeup or realistic Klingon makeup. I think that's...
Mm-hmm.
Or Mike Tyson makeup in the Eric Bana's case in Star Trek.
Or making you look pretty makeup in The Young Victoria.
Very pretty makeup.
Mm-hmm. This is a tough one, Ned.
Yeah, I mean...
It's hard to know what they'll do, because, maybe this is a spot they can give Star Trek an Oscar. Or a...
I think so. I think this may very well go to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be a first, I think, for the whole entire franchise. Wouldn't it?
I think you're right about that, Jerry, because the only one I can think that might have won something is Star Trek The Motion Picture, but I don't think that did either.
Yes, this might be the first time, but I don't think they've ever honored, the makeup before in Star Trek. This would be the first that I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'll go with Star Trek, too.
Yeah, I think we all will.
Best achievement in music written for motion pictures, original score. Avatar, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Hurt Locker, Sherlock Holmes, and Up.
Oh, shit.
I sense Jerry has a tough choice here.
Yeah, there's two really good choices here, and there's one that I don't even think should be even up there, and it's I maybe shouldn't say that, but.
You don't think Up should be there? Is that what you said?
No, I don't think Avatar belongs on there. I think it's a totally recycled score.
You know, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Up.
Mm.
I do, too.
Okay. I would actually go with Up, too. Alexander Splatt actually won last year for Benjamin Button, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good score for the Miss Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's a good, but I actually like the music for Up was really well done.
I like the music for Up too, and that's what I'm going with. Sherlock Holmes got in. Hans Zimmer did a lot of promotion for that score, and it's a very complex score using very diverse instruments. Some of the period, if I remember, period instruments, but
glad
I
to see
the Hurt
the
Hurt Locker, yeah.
Yeah, that was a bold choice.
Too. That's a good score, but Up, I think Up for me, and I think everyone's just rooting for Michael Giacchino, so.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I won't say that, but Up, I will go with Up,
that's
too. So the three of us for Up. Best achievement in music written for motion pictures, original song.
Your favorite category.
How did Paris 36 get on here? A movie that was reviled when it... came out. I mean, for the week it came out, so.
This is a surprise, yeah.
Yeah. Beyond that, Crazy Heart, The Weary Kind, Take It All, which is the final Marion Cotillard song from Nine, and two nominations for the Randy Newman's The Princess and the Frog, Almost There and Down in New Orleans. It could be the only one that Nine takes, but I'm going with Crazy Heart, The Weary Kind.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Although that is a good number, but I think Fergie has the best number in Nine. I was surprised she didn't get that one, or the Kate Hudson one, because see that Kate Hudson number.
Yeah, see the Kate Hudson one was the one I think we all thought Cinema Italiano was gonna. They still, I mean, you know, like this one from Paris 36. You know, this original song. You know, at least there's a couple more represented here, but, you know, it's almost like last year where it's a little bit baffled because I thought the Avatar song would actually go in here instead of the score.
You thought that song would go, okay. That would have even made that a couple, I'm glad they didn't do that because that would have even made people, I mean, the song from Avatar, I mean, it's not exactly, I don't know. Like, the Ewok song is better from Return of the
you,
Jedi.
Jerry, it's very moving. I see you.
Best achievement in sound mixing. Avatar, The Hurt Locker, Inglourious Bastards, Star Trek, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen.
Well, that last one we can eliminate immediately.
Yeah.
I'm still upset that Transformers can call itself an Oscar nominee now.
Yeah, I know, really. Can you see putting out the next edition Blu-ray DVD?
Yes.
Oscar nominated! Avatar, right?
Yeah.
I'd have to give it to Bastards here, just because the sounds in that film, there's some beautiful sounds in that, but that's true of also Hurt Locker, but it's Avatar. I mean, it's just pointless to even think of anything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. No, guys, I'm sorry to say that, but it's just when we get to these things, like we were doing a show in 97 or 98, we would have been saying the same thing about Titanic.
Yeah,
I mean, we really would have, and I hate to be like that. I hate to give it to a crowd pleaser, but there's just a lot of other great films out there. Really, I think more deserving, but it's not ours to say.
Yeah, see, unfortunately, you know, as most Oscar voters go down their ballots, they don't think about the intricacies of each one of these categories. You know, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it is.
You know, because if they thought about that and thought, okay, like film editing, you know, what's more innovative? You know, well, I can think of the Hurt Locker. Look at some of the things they did there. You know, but I don't think they think that way.
And sound editing, I mean, is Avatar, Hurt Locker, Bastard, Star Trek, and Up? So Avatar again for you and me, Jason. I would imagine.
Yeah.
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 It's these are
unless they eat out, you know, one that because it seems like it's either it doesn't sound editing sometimes that has kind of surprised us in the last few years.
Well, I think that the Bourne movie, the Bourne Ultimatum, took home all those awards.
Yeah.
And that was, and rightfully so. But I mean, I would love to see something like Hurt Locker or Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Or, but I just, it's, yeah, I mean.
Well, it could be the one, you know, I get this, there's this, even though I'm picking Avatar, I think that there's, I get this sense that maybe the two sound awards will split, you know, that like one of them will go to something else. You know, I don't know what for sure, but I just get the sense that maybe it won't be a clean sweep for Avatar. But
mm-hmm. Well, that's a sound judgment. Best
I can't
achievement.
Tell
what I'm right.
Best achievement in visual effects.
Well,
why even have the category? Avatar, District 9, Star Trek, and Jason's modeling headshot. So
stop with the Jason.
That was a visual effect.
Avatar, definitely, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, bet the farm on that one.
Okay.
That's the easiest one to predict.
Best anim. Oh, I have a clip for this one. We're on to best animated feature of the year.
Ah.
Now let me see if my switchboard will work for the clip. Hang on. Best animated feature of the year. Here are the nominees.
For best animated feature, the nominees are Coraline, Henry Selick. Fantastic Mr. Fox, Wes Anderson. The Princess and the Frog, John Musker and Ron Clements. The Secret of Kells, Tom Moore. And Up, Pete Doctor.
Mm.
Yep.
So this was one of the surprises, one of the what moments of the nominations, The Secret of Kells.
Yes.
Yeah,
at which point everyone collectively looked up to find out what was the secret of Kells.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And we're still trying to figure it out, I think.
I mean, people have seen it. There are people who've seen it or are going to see it, and the people who've seen it said it's very, very happy to see it up there. There's a lot of people, not a lot, but there is a. I wouldn't have mind seeing Ponyo on there, the Japanese anime film, but I guess that was a long shot. But this is really for me. While I love Coraline a lot, this is tough to decide between Fantastic Mr. Fox and Up. It's a very tough choice for me.
There could be an upset here. There could be a, you know, Fantastic Mr. Fox could maybe take it. It'd be kind of surprising being that Up managed to get a Best Picture nomination, but I still got to predict Up at this point, you know. But I wouldn't be surprised to see it, you know, go to Mr. Fox.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be richly deserving, I think, of either way.
Well, I think there's a lot of love for Fantastic Mr. Fox, but I don't see how you ignore Up.
I don't either. I don't.
Especially since it won't win Best Picture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sorry to give that away before the end of the show.
No.
Best Foreign Language Film of the Year. These movies are in a foreign language. So I will have somebody else read the nominees.
The best foreign language film we have from Israel, Ajami. From Argentina, El Secreto de Sus Ojos. From Peru, The Milk of Sorrow. From France, Un Prophète. And from Germany, The White Ribbon.
What do you think?
Yes, Anne Hathaway. I want to know her El Secreto.
Yeah. I think it's between, now, I'm probably wrong, but I think it's between The White Ribbon and Un Prophète. But it could be something that happens like last year where I thought it was between The Class and Waltz of Bashir, and the Japanese film Departures gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And Departures is a very run-of-the-mill film, but they seem to like that with the foreign films sometimes. They pick something that's very low-key.
Yeah, they do.
This year, I think Michael Haneke has a lock on this with The White Ribbon, unless I'm really missing something. The Israeli film just opened in New York today, and that's gotten rave reviews. That might get it, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like the year when Amelie was nominated, they gave it to No Man's Land. When Pan's Labyrinth was nominated, they gave it to The Lives of Others. And that was a tough year because all five choices were stellar choices.
Mm-hmm.
So I notice when we have these very popular foreign films,
mm-hmm.
they tend to give it to another one. I'm not, you know, that has happened. But I think The White Ribbon seems to be winning this category everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think The White Ribbon is hard to ignore. I think if anything will give it a run for its money, it's going to be a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right.
Yeah, see, foreign film, like you said, it's gotten interesting in recent years how You know, because this one's selected differently. You know, you have to attend, you know, verify that you've attended screenings and all of that. So it's not the general Academy membership voting on it. So it's, you know, they've been coming up with someone out of left field. So, but I don't, you know, the White Ribbon's getting such good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I'd predict at this point.
Okay, I think that's a consensus. The White Ribbon, best documentary feature, Burma Vijay. JJ, The Cove, Food Inc., The Most Dangerous Man in America, and Which Way Home. The only one I haven't don't have any knowledge of is Which Way Home.
I'm going to go with The Cove.
Yeah, me too.
Jason, do you have any knowledge of Which Way Home?
I read it. I can't remember now, and I don't want to say if because I might be wrong, but I thought I read up on the Academy website what the summary of that was. No, I can't. The documentaries are like mixing in my mind right now.
Okay.
But no.
Well, the Cove has had the most reach, the most effect, the most publicity out of all of these.
But Food Inc. is the most terrifying. Well, they're both pretty terrifying.
And they both have to deal with food.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But the Daniel Ellsberg one is starting to come out, make the rounds.
Yeah, it's opening in New York. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's gotten a lot. And they're interviewing. They're like, you know what they did with Robert McNamara? They're interviewing Daniel Ellsberg all over the place this week. So
mm-hmm.
that could work in its favor.
I think it's going to go to The Cove.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Now, Food Inc. is the second most kind of buzzed about film
yeah.
on this list. But, mm-hmm. but you know, and I know you guys like it. Actually,
I don't like the right word, but yeah,
appreciate it. For me, it was
I think
too,
appreciate, and I think like you're sort of Food Inc. is one of those things where you do honestly, you know, when you walk out of the theater, you're done watching it, you're like, wow, I did not, you know, there's just things in there, you're like, wow, I, you know, you think you know things, and then you watch something like that, and it throws you right on your head.
Let's go get a burger. Yeah,
yeah, you know, you're not the first thing you want to do. Hey, let's go to Burger King afterwards.
I actually thought it was too academic and clinical, but I think The Cove will get it because people are especially passionate about that movie. But we actually,
right.
earlier in the year, last year, we interviewed the director of Food Inc., Robert Kenner,
mm-hmm.
and here's just a couple of minutes of what he had to say about his movie.
I found that basically agribusiness was not very interested in talking to me. We spent an amazing amount of time approaching corporate business to include them in this project, only to be rejected continually by these companies. They just wanted to know everything we were doing. I think we were rather open in telling them. But ultimately, they did not want us. They did not want to be part of the conversation, and they did not want us to look in their kitchen. So, not being Michael Moore, I didn't want to sort of have myself on the phone being rejected, but at the same time, how do you let people know this is happening? And that became a challenge in the filmmaking.
Forgive me if this is an insensitive question, but do you feel that your film has suffered for their lack of participation?
Yeah, I mean, I think on some levels it becomes a more interesting conversation when people come to the table.
Right.
I think that we have a food crisis in this country, and I don't think it's going to be solved by going back to farming like we did in 1900.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not a sort of a romantic in thinking that we did everything perfectly before agribusiness existed. I think that ultimately we're not going to solve these problems unless people are ready to go think about it, talk about it, and deal with it. So certainly disappointed in terms of the big picture that they weren't ready to be there. Whether the film suffers or not, I mean, I think it sort of starts to paint a more, the film became a much more frightening portrait of something that went way beyond food, which
yeah.
was not what I initially thought we were doing. It came as a big surprise to me in the course of filming that this was about a lot more than just food.
Okay, that's Robert Kenner talking about Food Inc. So we all think The Cove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Best documentary short subjects, China's Unnatural Disaster, The Last Campaign of Governor Booth Gardner, The Last Truck, Closing of a GM Plant. Oh, goodness. Krojic Berlinusco. That's completely wrong.
What?
I have the foreign title here. I don't have the translation.
Music by Prudence, is that what you're trying to think of?
No, Music by Prudence is the fifth nominee.
Oh, Rabbit a la Berlin?
Well, yeah, Rabbit a la Berlin, okay.
Okay. I've got mumbo jumbo here. I've got like I've got Latinese or something.
What, did Aaron send you the list? I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, where did you get this list from? Are you reading
Latin? Whatever the title of it is, it's the untold story about wild rabbits that live between the Berlin walls.
Oh, that's
sounds, Rabbit
a la
Berlin.
That sounds fascinating. Okay.
It's not only a short subject, it's a very small one, too.
Yeah. Now, I'm actually excited about this. This is the first year that I've seen two of these.
Really?
How did you?
Yeah, because you well, they were on HBO. The Last Truck, GM Plant was on HBO, and China's Unnatural Disaster also was.
Oh, okay.
So I think, obviously I'm going to pick between those two since I've seen them, but I actually think because of the timely nature of, you know, the China with the relation to what's happening in Haiti, and then you've got The Last Truck, which deals with the recession, and actually that would be my personal choice of the two because I think it's a really good short documentary looking at how, you know, this GM plant closes down and, you know, how that. So it's kind of, you have these two current issues, but, you know, it's kind of a split vote, but I say maybe China's Unnatural Disaster kind of has an edge up just because the Haiti will be on the minds of a lot of voters.
Mm-hmm. Well, that and also just that China's, you know, we're all, you know, China's in the news every day, so
yeah.
And it's unavoidable. I think, although the Oscars have never been won for timeliness, they're sort of behind the,
well, that's true,
you know, too. You know, but this could be that one time where, hey, they are right on the ball, so.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with China, too.
God, we're so complacent tonight.
best animated short film, French Roast, Granny Ogrim, Sleeping Beauty, La Dama y la Muerte. Right? La Dama y la Muerte.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's not bad. Not bad.
La Garama, Wallace and Gromit in A Matter of Loaf and Death.
I'm going with
Wallace and Gromit Return.
Yeah, I'm going with, yeah, you know, Wallace and Gromit. Come on. But wasn't one of these also the, if I'm not mistaken, the Pixar?
No, the Pixar got, wasn't the Pixar this year that cloud one that showed before Up, where you got the cloud making a baby and it's got like the sad cloud that has just a stormy cloud or something? Yeah, I thought that was the Pixar, but I don't think either any of these are from Pixar. I think we're without.
No, I heard someone said, I just read someone, the Pixar one got nominated, but maybe, all right, that was a mistake. Okay, sorry. Ignore me.
Okay, I'll go with Wallace and Gromit as well.
Yeah.
Best short film, live action, The Door.
Wait a minute, do I get to tell my animated short film choice?
You just said Wallace and Gromit.
No, I didn't. I said Return of Wallace and Gromit.
Okay, let him go, man. Let him, I'm sorry, I thought you had said that too, Jason. That's my fault.
Oh, okay, sorry. I didn't mean to confuse everybody. No, I was just excited that they're in here, but I actually think this goes to French Roast, which I've actually seen.
Because, okay, I got it.
Well, it's very good. It's actually very good. It's beautifully animated. Okay.
French Roast. Okay. Best short film live action, The Door. Estalet Futur Abracadabra.
You want me to read the English for you? You want me to read the English for you? Here, let me do this. The Door.
Jamie's computer has become a foreign language now.
Wow. Dude, what do you have? Like old KGB records or something? Okay, The Door, instead of Abracadabra, Kavi, Miracle Fish, and The New Tenants. I don't know any of these. So, Jason?
No, I haven't seen any of these. I always like to go with the most interesting title, so I'm going with Abracadabra. Sounds fun.
Should we let Jamie do then all the foreign ones again?
Yeah.
I'll go for...
Tough choice.
I'll go for Kavi.
All right.
For no reason, except it's the one title that doesn't piss me off. It's not. It's
short. Easy for you to say.
I'm going with Miracle Fish. I buy that prediction.
Okay, let's go to cinematography.
Yes.
Avatar, The White Ribbon. I'm not about to pronounce that foreign title. I'll just say The White Ribbon. Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Yay!
The Hurt Locker and Inglourious Basterds.
Hmm. This is a tough one, too.
This is a tough one. I think it's... I'm going to go with The Hurt Locker.
I am, too, actually.
I think you're all crazy. I think the visual experience of the year is Avatar. So I think Avatar will get it. If it doesn't get it, The White Ribbon will get it.
I think that's what I was thinking, The White Ribbon. I'm just trying to help Catherine out here, okay?
Well, she doesn't need any help. Just wait till later on the show.
I know, okay.
Harry Potter was a surprise. I partly expected...
Well,
some. But I partly expected 9 to get in there. Just
mm-hmm.
cinematography.
Yeah.
I would have also put... Bright Star, and also there's several others that I could think of to put in there. But The White Ribbon is a very interesting choice, a fascinating choice. I really can't see this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's hear the nominees for Best Original Screenplay.
For Best Original Screenplay, the nominees are Mark Boll for The Hurt Locker, Quentin Tarantino for Inglourious Basterds, Alessandro Camone and Oren Moverman for The Messenger, Joel Coen and Ethan Coen for A Serious Man, and Pete Docter, Bob Peterson, and Tom McCarthy for Up.
I'm going with Inglourious Basterds.
I'm going with that too.
Yeah.
But it may... I don't know. Are we allowed to talk about anything else with this category, or are you trying to speed the show up, Jamie?
No, talk.
Okay, this is the one where I think the biggest upset was that 500 Days of Summer was not nominated, the one category
Clearly.
Where it had a lock, and
yeah.
I do think this is a really, really bad snub, because it is a wonderful screenplay, one that I've read several times, and it's just... beautiful dialogue, and it really, this is the one category where I thought it was a given. And now it's made my choice, obviously, yeah, Bastards. It was really tough to choose between those two as it is, but this deserved to be there. I'm happy to see The Messenger there.
Mm-hmm.
And The Hurt Locker certainly deserves to be there. Up, I like Up, but and A Serious Man I'm not sure about. I really don't know. But I just thought 500 Days of Summer deserved to be there.
Yeah, I would have put 500 Days of Summer in over A Serious Man in a heartbeat.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm glad, like I said, I'm happy to see The Messenger there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not upset about that, but it's just that I thought was a given. This is, you think that's the one thing it has a lock on to be nominated, mm-hmm. and it's not there. It's just so messed up.
Yeah. But I think this is the one place where, Bastards will take it, Tarantino will get the honor.
Right. I think this is the one place where Quentin is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree. So it's a three-way consensus. I love three ways. Here is the category of best adapted screenplay.
For adapted screenplay, we have Neil Blomkamp and Terry Tatchell for District 9, Nick Hornby for An Education, Jesse Armstrong, Simon Blackwell, Armando Iannucci, and Tony Roach for In the Loop, Jeffrey Fletcher for Precious, and Jason Reitman and Sheldon Turner for Up in the Air.
It's a tough category.
Yeah, it is.
Well, Jamie, I know you're happy about In the Loop getting in there.
I predicted it, and everyone said I was crazy. Thank you.
It's a great choice. It's a great film, so it deserves to be there.
But, Jamie, at the same time, you also predicted that The Burning Plain would be nominated.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking Precious.
No.
Even in the title, it says based on a novel, Push by Sapphire.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is Up in the Air, I think, is the one. I think this is where Up in the Air is going to win if it wins anything.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
But I'm happy to see In the Loop there. I'd love to see In the Loop take it.
Yeah, this is kind of the place. You kind of sense that year, this is the year, where you're seeing so many different films included. So you kind of get the sense that you know, a lot of these films will get their due in at least one category, and Up in the Air, I think this is probably the only place it's going to win, that it has the best shot of winning.
Yeah.
And just like Inglourious Basterds, one of its most well-known things, I think, is its screenplay. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're right, but for tonight, I'm sticking with Precious. I'll change it whenever I go on your show. Okay, we're really going through these.
Yes.
So let's move to directing. You ready to do directing?
Yeah.
Okay, here are the nominees.
The best achievement in directing: James Cameron for Avatar, Catherine Bigelow for The Hurt Locker, Quentin Tarantino for Inglourious Basterds,
yeah,
Lee Daniels for Precious, and Jason Reitman for Up in the Air.
I like how he said James Cameron.
Yeah, I know.
James
Cameron.
That's what I'm voting.
He speaks English like I speak any other language. Well, here's the monster. Here's the monster pairing with David and Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most press that this ceremony is going to get. It's the battle, you know, that they want to create between Catherine Bigelow and James Cameron. James Cameron has even said Catherine Bigelow needs to win.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. She's made the strongest movie of the year. If anyone else wins, I'm going to be pissed off, except for me. If I win, I'm going to be grateful. But so even Cameron's rooting for Bigelow, and I think everyone's rooting for Bigelow.
Yeah.
First of all, because she's deserving, certainly,
mm-hmm.
and as a secondary, because it would set history. First female director to win an Oscar.
Yeah, this is the moment I'm most looking forward to on Oscar night, and I'll be royally pissed if, because you're right, she's deserving. It's not just, they're not just giving it to her because it's a chance to honor the first woman director, but she's actually deserving. She deserves it in this category.
She really does. This is really hers. And I mean, I like most of the people in this category, but I'd have to say Bigelow, really, she's been at this for a long time. I don't think she's ever really made a bad movie, personally. So, and to say that she's been away from the game for a couple of years and she comes back with this film, that's astounding. I don't care who you are. That's an impressive film to make. She deserves it.
Yeah, she does.
I think she'll win, too. I think it's kind of a no-brainer.
So much of the press you talked about, Jamie, that's probably going to try to play up this thing about Cameron and Bigelow.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The battle isn't the press, and because it's good for the award show.
Yeah,
right, and I think that's going to even cement even further in the Academy's minds that you know they like to make history like that. You know, so you know if you know I think that will help her even more.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are going to want to see that it's finally time for a female director to win Best Director.
Let's go to Best Supporting Actress.
The 2009 nominees for Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role are Penelope Cruz in 9, Vera Farmiga in Up in the Air, Maggie Gyllenhaal in Crazy Heart, Anna Kendrick in Up in the Air, and Monique in Precious.
It's going to be Vera Farmiga.
Yeah. I guess it's a foregone conclusion Monique's going to win, but I'm not rooting for her.
Really? You didn't like of the performances? You didn't think she was the best?
I like the performance, but I'd have to honestly, if we were giving it a supporting performance that really, really makes the film, and I think important to the film, I'd have to go with Maggie Gyllenhaal for Crazy Heart.
Yeah, she was kind of a surprise nominee in this category.
Yeah, I mean, but if she really is, she and Colin Farrell, I think, don't get me wrong, I think Jeff Bridges' performance is great, but if it's just him in the film watching a drunk after a while, you know, it can get pretty boring. Those two performances, especially, you need her performance. It sort of anchors the film in a good way,
mm-hmm.
and I think she's actually phenomenal in it. I mean, it was one of the things that
went
away with in the film. And if someone, let's be honest, Melanie Laurent was robbed, as someone just pointed out.
Yes.
And I would put her in there. And also Kruger as well were both very good. But, I mean, it's just this is one of those things. Monique's going to get it, and it's unavoidable. Her performance, she is a monster in the film, and they seem to like to give it to the people who are villainous in the supporting.
Play the most colorful characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jerry, the one thing that helps Maggie Gyllenhaal is that's really a lead performance.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, they, and for a while they were campaigning for her for lead actress, and then the last couple of weeks they switched it.
Right.
you know, to a campaign for supporting actors, and it worked.
It's like Philip Seymour Hoffman for supporting in Doubt.
Yeah.
Right, right.
You know, he was the lead actor in Doubt. You know?
Mm-hmm.
They just knew that they couldn't get him a chance in that category.
You know, one of the supporting categories, and it's usually supporting actress, always does tend to throw a surprise in there.
Yes, yes.
So Monique, you know, it kind of depends on what happens during the next few weeks. You know, as all the talk starts going around, you know, maybe Gyllenhaal will get more of a push. You know, because she's another actress who's, you know, certainly put in her due, and you know, so it wouldn't surprise me. You know, I'm predicting Monique at this point, but this is one that I think could morph during this Oscar season.
Well, I used the Alan Arkin example. Everyone thought Eddie Murphy was going to win,
yeah,
and Alan Arkin won. So there's always a surprise like that.
And everyone thought Lauren Bacall was going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And Juliette
Binoche
won. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I would certainly see a surprise could possibly come here from Gyllenhaal. Probably Gyllenhaal's probably got the best chance. I mean, Penelope Cruz has no chance because she just won last year.
Yeah, I mean, she won last year, and as much as I like her, I didn't... I liked her more. I think she should have been nominated for Broken Embraces, personally,
yes,
but over this. That's just me. But
I honestly think they put her in here just because there was not that many good ones to choose from, really, honestly.
Well, let me throw this out there. Let me throw another performance out there. Emily Blunt for Sunshine Cleaning. Just to throw that out there. That was a good performance. I mean, it's a very small performance, but it's
mm-hmm.
one of the better performances from the first half of the year. Just a thought.
Good choice. I mean, if I was...
I would definitely throw in the Inglourious Bastards women.
Yeah,
Diane
Kruger and Melanie Laurent. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Melanie Laurent, I actually put in my... When I did my five, I put lead actress. I thought that deserved a nomination. Would
mm-hmm.
be a lead actress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the one I'd throw in maybe, too, is Catherine Keener for Where the Wild Things Are, which got unnecessarily snubbed.
Yeah, talk about a snub. That's the big snub.
Completely
mm-hmm.
shut out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, best supporting actor. Here we go.
The best performance by an actor in a supporting role. The nominees are Matt Damon in Invictus, Woody Harrelson in The Messenger, Christopher Plummer in The Last Station, Stanley Tucci in The Lovely Bones, and Christoph Waltz in Inglourious Basterds.
Couple of notable things here. First of all, we get to hear the name Matt Damon, which I always love.
Yeah, yeah.
In any other year connected to any other movie, Stanley Tucci would have a good shot because he has the typical supporting actor screwed up role.
Yeah, he does.
Christopher Plummer, this is his first nomination, correct?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is.
I believe
it
so.
And it's this.
That could be. That's unbelievable, though. Jeez.
Yeah, isn't it?
You mean he didn't get nominated for The Insider?
No, he didn't. And everybody expected him to be,
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, wow. And he's been in so many good films. This is the first? Wow.
That's amazing.
And Woody Harrelson, that it's very warming to see him nominated there.
In another year, I would say give it to him, but it's not his year. This belongs to Christoph Waltz. Let's not.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It belonged to him ever since the movie debuted at Cannes. I mean.
Yeah. The minute everyone saw that performance, they were like, "That's the year's best supporting actor right there."
Yeah. I mean.
So well deserved too.
Oh, absolutely.
God, that is just amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, Christoph Waltz all around. That's the odds-on favorite. It's usually, except for last year when they went in order of how a movie is put together, it's usually one of the first awards of the night, right? Supporting category?
Well, they always switch. Sometimes it's supporting actor, sometimes actress. You know, they just kind of switch it back and forth.
I remember when it was with the year Terms of Endearment, and I think that the supporting actor was like one of the first things, actually, and Jack Nicholson. Everyone said Jack Nicholson was win, and he won.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember it was, like, very early in the evening. I was like, wow, he already won. They were just interviewed him an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, so, yeah.
Let's go to Best Actress. We're on to the last three big ones here. Best Actress.
For Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role, the nominees are Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side, Helen Mirren in The Last Station, Carey Mulligan in An Education, Gabourey Sidibe in Precious, and Meryl Streep in Julie and Julia.
Okay. That's accurate. By the way, I think I'm glad that I can finally pronounce Sidibe's name correctly. It only took me, you know, a few months to find it.
Right. Well, who are we thinking here? Who are we thinking? Think that this is Sandra Bullock's year, or this is it?
Right now, yeah, that's what I'm thinking, especially the fact that The Blind Side got a Best Picture nomination.
Okay. There's a lot of snubs in this category, but we've mentioned some of them, but, I mean, the two obvious glaring ones, I think, are Blunt and Cornish, and also I'd have to throw out Audrey Tautou as Coco Chanel would have been a great choice. It's a wonderful performance, but I'm rooting for Carey Mulligan here, and I know Sandra Bullock's going to win. I mean, it's hers to lose, but I'd love to see Carey Mulligan. That's my favorite performance of who's nominated this year.
My personal pick would be Sidibe. But I think you're right.
I think if it doesn't go to Bullock, I think it might go to her. I would not rule that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, but we've talked about this before. I think that, you know, they've made such kind of small choices over the years, you know, like Marianne Cotillard for La Vie en Rose, you know, for films that nobody saw that. And I think, Jamie, you made this point that maybe the Academy senses it's time to award a true movie star again. You know, and so I think so much has been going Sandra Bullock's, you know, like this is her year, so. But this is the one that I think, you know, could change maybe over the next few weeks, you know, where people might say, you know, okay, really Sandra Bullock, or do we want to give Meryl Streep another Oscar since she hasn't won one since, you know, 82, 83 or whatever?
Very good as Julia Child, and I think the thing with Sandra Bullock is, you know, she teases with the press and everything. You guys thought I'd never be up here, but she was very good as Harper Lee in this. I mean, that's really great. I thought one of her best performances. I really thought.
Well, I've liked Sandra Bullock. I think she's done so. I mean, she's certainly had a lot of roles that have, you know, been forgettable. But
yep.
I mean, I think I like her as an actress, and I mean, I think she's.
I like her in this film. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah, she's good in the film. I mean,
it's a really good performance for her. And I think this is this year, like, I'm going to use this analogy. When Julia Roberts said that Denzel Washington needs to win an Oscar, and it's for Training Day, and actually Training Day is a very good movie, but I think we're on that same kind of wavelength here with her, that everyone thinks it's her due.
Well, the analogy with Sandra Bullock winning the award with Julia Roberts is that this is Sandra Bullock's Aaron Brockovich.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock will win. If she doesn't win, it'll go for Meryl Streep. That's
right. It's really between those two.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right there. But she is going to win. That would be the upset if she does not win.
They both give great speeches, Bullock and Streep.
Mm-hmm.
But Bullock is like, she's somebody to root for, you know.
I won't lie to you. Your interview with DJ Qualls, when he talked about working with her. And I gained a lot of respect for her, what he said about working with her and everything, how respectful she was, how helpful she was on the set and off the set. So, I mean, I gained a lot of respect for her after that interview, because that's something I didn't know.
And even in her reaction to the nomination, she's been very, very funny and self-effacing and cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think, and the thing with Sandra Bullock, I don't think she ever thought she was going to be at this point
where she would ever
win an Oscar. So, I mean, I think she is truly moved by it.
And she will win an Oscar and a Razzie this year.
Yeah, maybe. I wonder if anyone else has done that in the same year.
Yeah, I think they have. But actually, Sandra Bullock will win both. And Sandra Bullock said that she will accept her Razzie. She will be there the night before the Oscars to accept her Razzie.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
So even though, you know, I think we all agree that, you know, a lot of these other performances, Carey Mulligan and Sidibe, are probably better than hers. It's still going to be a fun moment on the Oscars.
But I have to say, though,
she's going to be genuine about it.
Said that, I know a lot of people aren't crazy about the film, but she does really give a really one of her best performances here.
Yeah.
Like, she has done better. Once she got out of it, I'm not crazy about the romantic comedy she does. I think they're pretty lame, but I think when she really pushes herself, she's very good.
Well, I thought she was great in Crash. I know I get criticized for that movie a lot.
No, but
the
performances in Crash are...
Mm-hmm.
Are good. I mean, I'm not the film's biggest fan, but I'm not going to say it's a hard. There are some great performances in there, and that is one of the things you do notice about that film, her performance. that right. doesn't stand out. Because you're like, wait, I haven't seen, I may have seen this side of her a while ago, but it's been clouded because she's, you know, like everyone, she makes poor choices. You know, every actor does. It's unavoidable, I think. But here, she's the last couple of years, she's been given some stuff to really work with.
Yeah.
Here we go with Best Actor.
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role are Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart, George Clooney in Up in the Air, Colin Firth in A Single Man, Morgan Freeman in Invictus, and Jeremy Renner in The Hurt Locker.
Okay.
Well, Jeremy Renner did get the nomination, Jamie. You were right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're all great performances. They really are. But I think
yeah.
Jeff Bridges is long overdue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a very heralded performance.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a man that's way overdue, so let's give it to him now, even though the performance might not be as deserving.
No, it's a whole career of just magnificent performances.
Yeah, but this is a this is one of his standout performances.
Yeah,
I would say I agree with it. I mean, if I'm looking at these five performances, I think Jeff Bridges is the best performance of these five. You know, and they're all good. But
they're
all
very good.
Yeah.
We actually spoke to Jeremy Renner, and I wanted to play a clip. We spoke to him in July, right before The Hurt Locker was released. And here's what he had to say about the notion of getting an Oscar nomination.
You know, you're getting a lot of talk about this film and possible Oscar consideration and that sort of talk. Can you conceive of that at all at this stage?
No, man, I can't. I surround myself with the things that are real.
Yeah.
Things that, you know, I take it like moment by moment, and you know, I'd be remiss to look into the future and not really focus on the moment in the present that's happening now, and feeling so blessed and so fortunate that this movie's first of all getting seen, before that it even got finished, or even got made, really, and just, you know, that it's being well received, you know, awesome, that, you know, hopefully people go see it, fantastic. So I just kind of take it moment by moment and kind of just enjoy this road, because it doesn't come around very often.
So I'm glad he's nominated. I think it's a kind of a, you know, you're great. You got a long, great career ahead of you. You'll be here again, kind of a nomination.
But I mean, if there is to be a shock and a surprise and an Adrian Brody type moment, Jeremy Renner could possibly.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If
you're right.
It would be the biggest.
Right.
That would be the biggest surprise.
Let's not rule out, though. I mean, those are both. I mean, the Renners, actually, I wouldn't mind seeing that. But, I mean, Jeff Bridges has just been so – I mean, all three of us on our shows have always talked about Jeff Bridges. We always talk about Fearless. We always talk about their older film. Winter Kills is the last picture show. Just countless great films, The Fisher King. And we really do want to see him win. Because we've always felt it's an injustice when he's not nominated. For really some other great films. But there is, I have to say, the Colin Firth performance in A Single Man is really good, but it's just not this year. But that is a really astounding performance from him.
Yeah,
in another year, he could be a serious contender, but...
Yeah.
You know, and Jeff Bridges, here's some irony here. The role that Jeff Bridges is playing now, Rooster Cogburn in The True Grit remake. Excuse me. The only... Wow, where did that come from? That's the Oscar that John Wayne finally won for playing that character.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, the timing's kind of perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, you slice it. Morgan Freeman, I like him in Invictus. I think it's a very accomplished performance. Obviously, people are a little lukewarm on this movie because it didn't even make the top 10 nominees for Best Picture, which might have been a surprise.
Surprising.
Morgan Freeman deserved to be there as one of the top five of the year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think
so.
It is a good – it's not a caricature. It is actually a a real performance. I don't feel like I'm watching someone just do an imitation. I feel like I'm actually watching someone. And also, I have to say, I didn't think I liked the film because from the trailers and everything, it didn't look. I mean, I love Clint Eastwood, but sometimes his films don't always work. And I thought this was going to be one of those cases. But I was really, because I don't know that much about that time period, and so I thought it was informative. But I also just thought that his performance was, wow, he really got into the character.
It was one of the few times that, you know, Morgan Freeman is such an imposing presence in a role. And it was one of the few times that, you know, I really forgot I was watching Morgan Freeman. I really, you know, I truly thought I was seeing Nelson Mandela. And, you know, so, I mean, I think that's a mark of a really good performance that he gives.
There's a great scene early on where, you know, the white South Africans, you know, are leaving. You know, they don't want to be around in the office when they're taking, you know, when his cabinet's coming in, and he gives that speech, and he says, look, we need your help. Please stay here. The film really taught me about this whole, the idea to forgive these people who had imprisoned you for so many decades. And I know a lot of people don't like the film or like you said, lukewarm about it, but I actually thought it was a very powerful performance from him.
I love the film, and I love the performances of he and Matt Damon.
Yeah.
I'm personally glad that both of them got nominated.
I agree.
Both roles are there.
And as MJ presents, pointed out, Viggo Mortensen was robbed. I would have nominated him for the role, but there's only like five slots, but I did felt he gave a very powerful performance in that film. But I don't, has Viggo been nominated? Was he nominated for A History of Violence?
No, he was nominated for Eastern Promises. Though.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, he's quite okay. So he's people do recognize him, but I would have given it to him for the role, but I don't know who I would have taken out though of that equation.
Yeah, I mean these five you kind of expected were going to be the five that, you know, got in there. I know Jamie will disagree with me, but I still think it's one of George Clooney's best performances, even though I know he won't win. But you know, I think it ranks up there with the best of what he's done.
I think it is one of his best performances.
Oh, well,
yeah,
look at Jamie.
And I still don't think it's very good. Now we have, for the first time since 1943.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
43. We have 10 nominees for Best Picture. This is the most kind of ink that the Oscars this year has garnered. And a lot of people are excited about these choices, and a lot of people are kind of going, eh. But we'll get our takes after we play these nominees.
I'm pleased to announce that the 10 films selected as Best Picture nominees for 2009 are Avatar, James Cameron and John Landau, producers.
You must choose your own Ikram, and he must choose you.
When?
When you are ready.
The Blind Side, nominees to be determined.
It's mine?
Yes, sir. What?
Never had one before.
What, a room to yourself?
A bed.
District 9, Peter Jackson and Carolyn Cunningham, producers.
You blood shot! Hey! Oh!
Marvanyama! You tell him to stand up!
Watch him, Ayende, Mambo Boa.
You tell him to be quiet!
An Education. Finola Dwyer and Amanda Posey, producers.
My choice is to do something hard and boring, or to marry my Jew and go to Paris and Rome and listen to jazz and read and eat good food in nice restaurants and have fun. It's not enough to educate us anymore, Miss Walters. You've got to tell us why you're doing it.
The Hurt Locker. Nominees to be determined.
25
meters, roger that.
Butcher shop, 2 o'clock. Dude, on the phone.
Why is Elvis running? Come on, guys, talk to me.
Drop the phone!
Hey, bro!
I can't get a shot!
Inglourious Basterds, Lawrence Bender, producer.
We're going to be dropped into France, dressed as civilians. Once we're in enemy territory, as a bushwhacking guerrilla army, we're going to be doing one thing, and one thing only. Killing Nazis. Sound good?
Yes, sir!
Precious, Lee Daniels, Sarah Siegel Magnus, and Gary Magnus, producers.
I never really talked in class before.
How does that make you feel?
Here.
A Serious Man, Joel Cohen and Ethan Cohen, producers.
Where would I go?
Oh, for instance, the Jolly Roger is quite livable. It's not expensive. The rooms are eminently habitable.
This would allow you to visit the kids.
There's convenience in its favor. You've got a pool.
Wouldn't it make more sense for you to move in with Cy?
Harry.
Larry, you are jesting.
Up, Jonas Rivera, producer. And Up in the Air, Daniel Dubiecki, Ivan Reitman, and Jason Reitman, producers.
How does it not even cross your mind that you might want a future with someone?
It's simple. You know that moment when you look into somebody's eyes and you can feel them staring into your soul and the whole world goes quiet just for a second?
Yes.
Right, well, I don't.
Okay, those are the 10 best picture nominees. First of all, we were considering this for months and months since they have announced expanding this category. We're thinking, is this the right year? Can we find 10 pictures? So in the end, when we see the nominees, Jason, what do you think? A good idea to institute this year?
No, not this year. I mean, The Blind Side would have never gotten a Best Picture nomination if it had five. I mean, that you have a good handful of movies here. But I don't know that it's worthy of, like, they always make the comparison to 1939, you know, how could you have just five to choose from? But this is not a 1939 year.
2007 was that year, I thought.
Yeah, there have been some years this past decade that could have been, you know, worthy of this. But, you know, when I think of Best Picture nominated films, I try to think of films that are going to stand the test of time. And The Blind Side is a popular success right now, but I'm not sure that it's really, and A Serious Man, you know,
I don't know. I just don't know what to think about that movie at this point.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a hard movie to really kind of, you know, it's not one that I really liked that much. I guess I respect it more than like it, but, you know, so I think there's still maybe only, you know, five, six films maybe on the list that I think are going to be the most remembered from 2009 on the list. So I don't know.
I like the mix. I like that there's a lot of different kinds of movies represented here. And I think in their choices, it is, if it wasn't before, it certainly is now obvious why they expanded the category.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've got a mix here of, I think, five films that have made over $100 million at the box office, and they've got some that are the typical kinds that they've honored in the past few years, like An Education and A Serious Man, which have made $2. You know?
Yeah. I see, if I was to do it, I mean, yeah, I would think maybe I would have added, because if this was done to correct the mistake of last year because The Dark Knight wasn't nominated, I'm not sure then it works. Because if it was up to me, I would have just put a bunch of smaller films that I like this year that we've been talking about throughout the night, and that would not be a great way to get ratings. This was done for the main reason to boost ratings. So now, having said that, I'm not sure if this is going to work because they didn't pick, like, a crowd pleaser like Star Trek, where a lot of people thought The Hangover was going to get in here.
Mm-hmm.
I had given up on 500 Days of Summer in this category a couple weeks ago when I started to see a lot of critics' top 10 best list and other things, and it wasn't on there. So I didn't think that 500 Days of Summer was going to get that. So that I didn't think that was a snub in that category, but definitely in the screenwriting category. But I don't know if I think this is a good idea yet. I really don't.
Well, people love Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
People
love
The Blind Side. I think especially The Blind Side targets people that might not watch the Oscars to begin with.
Yeah, you're very true. I mean, a lot of people that I know that aren't regular movie buffs are all talking about The Blind Side, how happy they are that it got a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, Jason's absolutely right. You're right. The Blind Side is the movie, ironically, that may be the reason people would tune in, that
mm-hmm.
would normally tune in. I don't think a lot of people are saying, oh, it shouldn't be up there. Well, regardless of what you may think, that movie has brought in so much money that no one thought it would. Originally, when we saw the trailer, the first time I saw the trailer was in front of Inglourious Basterds, and I'll say it right now, it's like a Lifetime movie with a huge budget, as someone pointed out in the chat room, and that's kind of what it is. But that's what people, you know, are flocking to, and if that's what they're flocking to, you hope then that will be duplicated in your ratings.
Well, the one thing they can't complain about is if their ratings are down, it's not because of their best picture choices, because you've got the broadest range that I think they could have put together here. I mean, you've got the biggest box office blockbuster of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, Bastards
of all time
with,
now. You have the biggest
of all time, yeah. Of all time, you know. So
like I said, if it was up to me, if I was doing the, if it was up to me to do the choices, let's be honest, these would all have been small films. I would not have gone for some of these bigger ones, and that would have been a disaster because no one would have watched it. But I, The Blind Side, I think you guys are right. That's going to be the tipping point. I think that's why people will tune in, that and obviously Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be honest, I think if we had only had five, I think we would have seen Avatar, Hurt Locker, Inglourious Basterds, Precious, and Up in the Air would have been the five nominees,
yeah.
Most likely, I think.
I agree with that. I think you're right.
So, I mean, in a way, a couple of these choices, I mean, it's cool that Up got in there now, and I think that
I
only
think
was possible
nine
because of
got 10.
In
there.
Yeah, District 9. You know, but I think, you know, and like putting an Education in there, which it was a good film, but I don't know if I'd put it in with the, you know, 10 of the year, but so I don't know. It's gonna be, we're gonna have to see this in place for a couple of years to see if this is a success.
Now, let me ask you this, both of you, this: if this doesn't work, if the ratings are not up, are they gonna still try this again next year?
I think they will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think if the Academy does anything, they stick with a decision for a very long time before.
Yeah, they do.
They realize.
Yeah, they typically don't make rash judgments about things. They tend to, you know, go with something for a while and you know, and stick with it. It's sort of like when they change days that the telecast is on.
Right.
You know,
right.
there's always a big, you know, thing. Do we move it on to a weekend? You know, as opposed to Monday nights like it used to be or something like that. And, you know, so it takes a while before they start making big changes. So.
Okay, so what are our thoughts? What will win?
Oh dear.
Well, I would love to see an Inglourious Basterds upset here. But the way that the season has been going and the way that the press is going to already play, is already playing this, it's Avatar versus the Hurt Locker.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be the big decision. You know, it's going to be, does the Academy go for the biggest blockbuster of all time and make, you know, millions and millions of people happy who love that movie and saw it? Or do they go with the more likely choice, which is the Hurt Locker? And right now I got to pick the Hurt Locker. I think when they do sit down and actually make that ballot, and that's where I was going to say, I think they're going to check off all those marks in the technical categories. They're like, okay, we're going to honor Avatar. You know, it can walk away with the most Oscars of the night. But when it comes to Best Picture, you know, I'm going to put this film that, you know, was probably the most successful Iraq war film, you know, to date. And it would be a well-deserved choice. I'll be happy on Oscar night if Hurt Locker and Glorious Bastards wins this category.
Yeah.
Because I think they're both well-deserving choices. If Avatar wins, I'm killing a blue person.
Oh, my God. Blue people everywhere are in danger.
I think the safe bet, the safe bet right now is the Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with the Hurt Locker.
But I would love an upset. I mean,
who wouldn't in this?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love Inglourious Basterds to win,
because
all three of us, it's our favorite movie of the year.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Watch it be something like The Blind Side, though. Don't count the Blind Side out.
I wouldn't. I said that yesterday when this thing was announced. If that's up there, if that many people voted for it, there's a very strong chance.
Jamie, if The Blind Side wins, I may have to quit my show.
Yes. Well, here's hoping that The Blind Side wins.
How am I going to be able to stand up for that organization if they pick The Blind Side over some
right.
of these choices?
I understand. I understand.
That would be see, I could understand if they pick an Avatar, for instance. You know, I could understand where at least Avatar there's some level of what an artistic achievement of a Best Picture to me is. But if they pick The Blind Side, then to me they've really sold out. You know, that they're making the choice now solely to pacify the ratings. You
right.
know, so that would piss me off more.
Yeah.
you know, see them make a decision like that. Because you can't sit there, a person in the industry, and honestly tell me that The Blind Side is the best film of these 10.
Well, mm-hmm.
I agree. But normally it's not my choice for the best movie of the year anyway when they announce the winner of Best Picture.
It rarely matches mine too, but.
But I know what you're saying. So you're discounting The Blind Side altogether, even as a dark horse.
Yes, I would think the only ones that have a serious shot at. I really think it's Inglourious Basterds. I think has a legitimate shot because I think, you know. They could make a serious push for that in the next few weeks.
Well, I think
the SAG
helps its case.
And it's a film that everybody loves. You hear it mentioned, you know, and people are like, yeah, you know. So it's got a good support base behind it, and it was a successful film at the box office.
It was. I think it's his most successful film since Pulp Fiction, actually.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. It's really interesting though, because Inglourious Basterds is one of those films that people are very passionate about it, like we are. And then there are other people. I was talking with people last night at the gym who were very lukewarm and didn't think it was his best film at all. And
yeah, well, some people feel like in terms of Academy,
yeah.
that it's not a prestige pick, that it's
right.
too fun.
Mm-hmm. And that that could be what hurts it, you know. But it, you know, that would be the only. It's really only those three that I see as the real serious contenders with the biggest shot here. Because I don't think Precious wins. Up in the Air has kind of lost its luster.
It has. It's amazing how that's...
Yeah, well, Up in the Air was that one that peaked so early, you know, that it was everybody's favorite, and then it just, you know, nosedived. But The Hurt Locker has been nothing but rising in prestige.
I was talking to people about Inglourious Basterds last night, and they just weren't crazy about it. They really liked other movies. They liked, I think, what was it, Pulp Fiction more. And I understand that. But I don't know. I think Inglourious Basterds is one of the best things he's ever done.
I agree.
I didn't expect it to be. I really was kind of expecting something more along the lines of Death Proof, in a sense of just him having fun with genre. And here it's completely exceeded my expectations. So I'd love to see him. I would love to see that, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. But The Blind Side winning would be, as you said, Jason, it would... So we're giving it to Lifetime movies on a big, huge budget.
Yeah, see, that's what it is. I mean, it's a good. I'm not arguing that it's not a good film.
Right.
You think of an Academy Award Best Picture. That is the most prestigious honor that exists in the film industry. And someone in the chat said it good. The Blind Side would pass The Greatest Show on Earth as the worst winner ever.
Because you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a handful of films like The Greatest Show on Earth and. Where the Academy has made a choice like that, but I don't see what in their right mind would ever prompt them to think that The Blind Side would get a vote over The Hurt Locker or Avatar. And
I think, which we would love to see, a percentage of the votes that each of these get.
Well, keep in mind about and someone mentioned this in the chat too, the preferential voting that's in place, you know, that I think helps The Hurt Locker actually, because I think even if someone puts Inglourious Basterds number one, I think you're going to see Hurt Locker in a lot of people's top two, top three. So that preferential voting is going to keep The Hurt Locker in almost everybody's top three, so I think that helps it in the voting as well.
Let me throw this out there, though. Avatar is still going very strong, obviously, at the box office. We have a flood of 3D movies coming out in the next couple of months. Clash of Titans, Alice in Wonderland, and How to Train Your Dragon, and all this. Do you think they may give it to Avatar just for, you know, because this is ushering in this whole new era where everything is being turned into 3D?
Well, it wouldn't surprise. Well, let me say this: if they open the envelope and it says Avatar, I will not be shocked.
No,
because I think everything that you just said. Is representative of what that film is for this year. It's a game changer in the industry, and you know, so I can see a bunch of industry people, you know, could give it Best Picture, and in a way, if you're voting your ballot, they might say, okay, we're giving Catherine Bigelow Best Director. That's our place. We can honor The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
You know, but now Best Picture. I mean, you know, here's a film that has really changed movies forever. You know, and has clearly had an influence, and has clearly. You know, been a success, you know, sort of like what Titanic was. So I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be extremely disappointed, but I would not be shocked. The Blind Side would be the shock of the night.
Yeah, I think that would be.
Yeah.
Okay. I think the order in likelihood is The Hurt Locker, Avatar, and Inglourious Basterds.
Yep. I agree with you there.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a call from Roland. Talk a little bit more about the Oscars in their entirety, and then we'll close out with our mystery film score of the week. Exciting. I know you're
I've been waiting.
I know you have. your whole participation in this show has just been a ploy to the ending.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
I'm trying to bring up his line. Roland, do I have you?
Hey, Jamie, how's it going?
Hey,
bud.
Hey, Jay. Hey, Jason.
Hey, what's up? So, What do you think of all this madness?
I'm listening to the show kind of in and out. I think...
Oh, you do that too? Okay, I'm not the only one. Okay, good.
I think Avatar will probably win.
Mm-hmm.
You're going with Avatar.
I mean, it's not a... Really, that seems to be where it's all going. Yeah.
I'd rather see the Hurt Locker win than Avatar out of those two. But you know what? If the Blind Side won, I think it would be a shock. And I wouldn't be kind of, like, you know, I disagree with what Jason's saying. I wouldn't be really let down or anything. I think it'd be a shock. So any
it
shock is good.
Shock. But do you think? Let me ask you guys this though. The thing here with the Blind Side is her performance. I mean, it's not represented in any other category. I mean, it's really her performance that's the thing that everyone's talking about. So it would be one of these cases. There's no director. There's no screenplay nomination. I honestly don't see that happening just because it's not represented that well. But what do I know? Neither was.
Yeah, very rarely has it happened. Lately in Oscar history where a film wins Best Picture without having a pretty good number of nominations to go with it.
Yeah, I think it's surprising that it's even got, well, if it was five, I agree, I don't think they would have gone with the Blind Side.
Do you have strong feelings about any of the other categories, Roland?
No, I think this year's pretty much a foregone conclusion, really. I think Sandra Bullock, Jeff Bridges, Monique.
It does seem that way. It does.
Christoph Waltz.
Those would be the upsets. If none of those won, those would be...
Yeah. Bigelow or Cameron, hopefully Bigelow. I think screenplay's a bit more interesting. So...
Yeah, a lot of it, I mean, you can tell by the three of us agreeing pretty much 95% of all the categories that we've gone through tonight. I think a lot of it, I mean, I'm looking for something to win that I don't agree with just so there'll be a surprise in the night.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's going to be in these small categories that everyone complains about that are non-film industry people that are actually going to be the most dramatic because they're the ones that could possibly have the surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the last big shock we had was Crash.
That was definitely.
Yeah, that was a big surprise.
I really thought it would be Brokeback Mountain that year.
Definitely.
I really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember being really. I mean, Adrian Brody was a shock. Roberto Benigni for Best Actor was a shock.
Who else was up? Was it Daniel Day-Lewis was up for Gangs in New York? Who else was up?
Jack Nicholson for About Schmidt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There was a lot of talk about Nicholson. Too,
Nicolas Cage for Adaptation. And who's the one I'm forgetting?
I know Adrian Brody was in a shock in a good way that Adrian Brody won. I mean, it was a great honor.
Yeah.
Great performance.
And he got to kiss Halle Berry. So.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Yeah, well. What, would you not if you had that chance?
Yeah, I mean, really, come on.
So in all, we think the nominations are... Typical, predictable, or are we ambivalent about them? What do we feel?
There are some surprises, good surprises. I mean, like with District 9, I think getting the showing it got. But then there are some snubs that we've talked about. I mean, it's a mixed bag. Like it is the last couple of years, it's been a really mixed bag, I think. But,
hey guys, you know, for me, if District 9 won, that would be like amazing.
Oh, I would have no problem with that. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
Roland, you and I are killing this show right now.
Look, I like District 9. I like District 9 fine.
Okay.
I did too. I think it deserves to be. It was on my top 10 list, and mm-hmm. I think it deserves to be in the 10 nominees for Best Picture. I'm glad to see it make it there.
I mean, it's no 9, but...
It's no 9, you know.
That's true.
I saw The Messenger, and I saw The Single Man.
So do you agree with where those films were represented at the Oscars, the nominations?
Kinda. Don't particularly agree with the screenplay nomination for The Messenger. I don't know. Yeah, I think Colin Firth is worthy of his nomination.
Oh yeah, he is. I would, in another year, I mean, I would love to have put Ben Foster up because he's a great actor and it's a great performance from him.
Well, I don't think in another year, I think he should have been nominated for that.
Yeah, I mean, who would you? All right, who would you have taken out for Ben Foster?
From lead.
Yeah, for lead actor, who would you have taken out?
So we've got Morgan Freeman, we've got Colin Firth, we've got Jeremy Rayner. Who are the other two?
Jeff Bridges
and
George Clooney.
I'll probably take out Clooney. Because Clooney, we've seen that performance from Michael Clayton.
Kind of. It's a similar performance, kind of. Michael Clayton is a really awesome movie. I like Up in the Air, too, but they're both anti-corporate films. It's his anti-corporatism that he chooses these parts. I don't know who I would take out, but I just think Ben Foster is just such an underrated actor. Who, as soon as he's come on the scene, is just a powerhouse, and he's a great actor. And I would have not ruled out a supporting actress nomination for Samantha Morton for this role for this film. I mean, she was wonderful in this.
She's been talked about.
I heard you talk about her before. I know you like her. She's a pet peeve of mine.
I know she's not in Dear John, so, and she's not in Leap Year. So. But that's another. Okay, speaking of snow, Amy Adams. Not for Julie and Julia. I was thinking
Leap Year.
Shine Cleaning. I would have given her.
Confessions of a Shopaholic.
No, that I wouldn't have gone with. But that's what Isla Fisher or something.
Oh right. Okay.
So I
get them mixed up.
Okay, so. All three of you guys are out to see Dear John this weekend.
I'm going to try to go see The Last Station if I'm not snowed in.
Dear John. Wow.
I already had to see Leap Year. Leap Year is about all I could do this year. So.
Well, at least that had Amy Adams in it.
Looking ahead at the upcoming year, what title pops out for you as a big contender?
For Oscar?
Yeah.
No, I haven't even looked yet. I got to get through the Oscar season first before I can even concentrate on the next year.
And you have a show called Oscar.
Yeah, I work in Oscar season, so I mean
Tree of Life.
I just hope it gets released this year.
Tree of Life, Terrence Mount.
Shutter Island, maybe, if it's as good as everyone says it is.
Well, then they just got to remember it. It's going to be
so
far back to February, but...
Okay, so Tree of Life, I think that's a fair guess.
Writer.
And actually, Terrence Malick just announced his next movie that he's making with Christian Bale today.
And Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, that's right. The Ghost Rider, the Roman Polanski one, I think could be a contender.
Right. I thought you were talking about the Nicolas Cage.
No. And hey, Inception, the Chris Nolan film in the summer is a possibility.
Definitely.
I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, I'm very curious.
Really, really.
Well, we really obviously got to look at the holiday season to find the true Oscar contenders.
So this year, Jamie, that's why I wait.
Yeah, well, let's wait and see. Let's not jump.
Yeah, I mean that's why you do an Oscar show 12 months out of the year. And
yeah, let's wait, Jamie. Let's just get through this one.
Let's get special handle, Jamie.
I thought it was a wonderful way to end the conversation.
No, it was a very good way. I thought Jason would have a lot to say on the subject.
I will in at the beginning of March.
No, but I understand what Jason means. Let's just get through this one first.
That's right.
Okay, I want to ask you whose dress you're looking forward to seeing. What other Oscar topics are there?
Well, the show, that's the part I think we're going to
show. Okay, let's talk about the show. I've expanded this show a little bit, just a little bit, because that's a good point. The production of the show, which has all of this work, I think.
Yeah, I mean, since there's so few surprises now, it's really going to be, okay, what kind of show are they going to put on? Because I think they've got a lot to top with last year's show. That was one of my favorite Oscar shows of recent memory. The way that they structured that show, you know, how reverent it was of the event, I mean, everything was great. And everything I've heard from these two producers suggests to me that we're in for a hell of a disappointment in the show. It's disturbing to think what they're trying to do. I mean,
and what are some of those things that you've heard?
Now, why do you have to ask me specifics? I would have had them in front of me if we were prepared.
You should know them by heart.
I know the nominees by heart. I can't sit here and remember all that.
Okay.
But I remember. It's big musical numbers. Yeah,
musical
numbers. Taylor Lautner, I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, they're bringing him out? Oh, my God.
Yeah, they want to have Taylor Lautner. I mean, I think it's going to be a return to the cheesy dance numbers that we got rid of so many years ago because nobody liked him at the Oscars anymore. You know, and you know, I'm already pissed that the honorary awards were shuttled off to their own ceremony. So that's always a part of the ceremony that I think is great to pause from all the Oscar giving, you know, to really honor some true legends. And, you know, so I don't know. This is the year that the Academy is so focused on the ratings, you know, so that, and so trying to get the young crowd in who really don't care anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so they're just going to piss the people off that really love this show and love everything that it's about. And those people aren't going to watch it anyway. You know, so I don't know. It's at this point.
Are the co-hosts, reason enough?
Well, that's the one saving grace. I mean, I'm looking forward to the two of them. I think that's a good dynamic. But, you know, I don't know. I have a bad feeling in my stomach about it.
But hosts, you know, they're good for their stretch of opening monologue.
Yeah.
But they depend on, comics depend upon a rhythm,
mm-hmm.
Establishing a rhythm. So, you know, the more they come out after all this stuff in between, the less effective they are, I think. So beyond that opening monologue, I think that's the only thing you can depend on hosts for.
Well, yeah, and some in recent years, some hosts disappear for quite a bit of the rest of the show after after that. So that's really their one moment is the opening monologue, and I'm really looking forward to that, but the rest of the show it worries me a little.
So you think you can dance people or something like that's going to be on?
I don't know.
Well, they did a contest, yeah, they did some dance contest where they're putting them in there for, you know. I just hope we don't have an abundance of musical numbers.
That's what it sounds like, though. I mean, I don't know.
And I disagree with the, I've said this before, I disagree with having a special honorary award or memoriam segment just for John Hughes.
Oh, I don't think the Academy will do that. I think who did that? The Broadcast Film Critics did that?
They've talked about planning it. They're planning it.
Well, they've done it before. They've done it for people like, didn't they do it for Kubrick and Paul Newman? And, you know, they made some special, you know, outside of the in memoriam. But I think with this past year when we lost so many legends, I don't think they'll do that in the interest of time.
I think singling out anyone is in bad taste.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah.
The only thing I hope about the In Memoriam is that they don't do it like they did last year and have a singer come out and sing a song over it. You know, because they kept going to the Queen Latifah, and we couldn't see the full screen of the image, so the effect on the viewer was not.
Are you commenting on the size of Queen Latifah?
No, I'm not commenting on the size of Queen Latifah.
Well, let's hope they don't bring out Ed Asner then. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Well,
I am looking forward to Taylor Lautner and Mickey Rooney sharing the same stage. I think that'll be
a great moment in Oscar history.
And when Taylor Lautner was asked about Mickey Rooney, he said, "Oh God, I love those old Disney cartoons." So,
oh my God.
Yeah, I hope Mickey Rooney is there. I hope we see him there.
He punches Taylor Lautner or something.
He is an institution.
Yes.
I really liked last year when they brought out
I loved it last year
the actors to speak about each nominee.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're only going to do that with the two major, the best actor and best actress this year, and they said Friends. I don't know that that's a distinction that I mean, it's not going to be their neighbor down the street or the one that.
I think that'd be cool if it was their neighbor down the street or like the person at the person's coffee shop or like, or better yet, it would be like the personal assistant or an intern.
I sold Jeff Bridges a donut this morning, and I just wanted.
Yeah, we shared a donut this morning, and he really deserves his Oscar because he's such a great.
The intern or like an old personal assistant. Mr. Bridges. We used to get high in the back of the, back.
It would be like a This Is Your Life kind of thing. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Well, the producer did say in one of the segments that's on Oscar.com right now, he says, that he thinks that a lot of the Oscar ceremonies lately have lost their sense of fun, so that's where I sense, that it kind of concerns me, because I think there's a balance with the Oscars. I think you a good host like a Billy Crystal was able to do is you maintain the reverence for the event, but you also can poke fun at it at the same time. But if you go too far, then you're not successful if you're trying to make it just a joke, and it's not a joke. I mean, these are serious awards. I mean, actors' salaries go up because of these, films make more money sometimes off the Oscar win, so.
Find a happy medium. You gotta be just biting enough to be memorable, but not too nice so that you're cheesy,
And Steve Martin has been a good one in his
Steve
couple
Martin's
of
perfect games. At it.
He's perfect at it. He's got that great balance of
Chris Rock maybe too biting.
Yeah, Chris Rock was a little too, and Jon Stewart to me was not quite as successful at maintaining that balance, although I kind of liked him as the host. I mean, I thought it was a different kind of dynamic.
He was good, yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it seeing him do that. But, I mean, Billy Crystal and Steve Martin have been some of the best ones that can maintain that balance. They go back to the tradition of Johnny Carson and Bob Hope, what they were able to do.
I just want Mickey Rooney to come out and reenact the No More Pull-Up scene from 2012. That's what I want.
Wow, okay.
Because he wears them. So, did we lose somebody? I think we just lost Jason. Jason, if you're listening, feel free to call back in. I hope that the ceremony is good. It would be such a disappointment if it's a cheese fest. And I mean, there are always musical numbers at the Oscars, but I didn't mind them last year, even though I thought that Baz Luhrmann number was just atrocious.
Guys, did you agree with Slumdog for last year?
No. I liked Slumdog. It's kind of like if The Blind Side won this year for me.
I don't know.
Because I thought Benjamin Button was the achievement of last year.
There are
so many other films I
would have nominated, though. But
of course you hated Benjamin Button.
I like Benjamin Button.
It didn't have a love story featuring Amy Adams in it.
Do you know what my top film for last year was?
Oh, I can't imagine.
7 Pounds.
Really? I couldn't get into that one. My top film was In Bruges.
In Bruges?
Yeah.
And I think second to 7 Pounds, I liked Gran Torino.
Oh, Gran Torino was another one of my top films, but 7 Pounds I just wasn't crazy about.
But, Joey, I've said this to you before. If you look at last year and this year, 2007 just stands out as for me the best year.
Oh, yeah, 2007 is the best year. I did not have a problem with 2009, though. I found a lot of great smaller films that I really loved a lot. I didn't have the problem. I thought there was a lot to choose from. No, so there were some major disappointments, but there were also some really unexpected gems, too. So I didn't have the problem with it.
Do you think the Lovely Bones was looking to get a lot more?
No, but I didn't think it was as bad as everyone said it was. I'll be honest with you. I really didn't think that was as bad as everyone was making it out to be.
I love Lovely Bones, but let's get back to the 7 Pounds. What?
Why did 7 Pounds get such a hard time? Well, because people worked it out. I mean, I don't understand people's criticism for that film with the fact that they worked out the twist. It wasn't about working out the twist. You could work out the twist in the first 15 minutes in, but that wasn't what the film was about.
I don't know. I don't think it's one of those films that's bad, but I could take or leave it, Roland. It just, just how I am. I could
We start. The whole show is about Oscars, and now we're talking about 7 pounds.
Yeah, can we just start?
I thought it was completely incoherent. I just thought it was a mess. And he's lying in the bathtub with a squid or something.
No, it's a jellyfish.
Oh, a jellyfish. Well, that's better.
That jellyfish was cool, man.
All right. So Oscars, March 7th. We're going to be talking to some more nominees in the weeks ahead. So look forward to that. We'll be back next Wednesday night for another show.
With Sam Levine, right?
Yes. Enjoy the Super Bowl on Sunday. Who are
yes.
your picks for the Super Bowl real quick before we close out?
Colts.
Okay. I'm going with the Saints. Just because it means a lot to them.
Okay.
It doesn't really mean a lot to me either way.
Right. It does.
I just want a good game.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
All right. Now, mystery movie song of the week. We've done that for a couple of months. We're going to turn to film scores. And like the mystery movie songs, they're not all going to be gimmies. They're not all going to be obvious.
I didn't think the songs were obvious. Okay.
Right. That's what I said.
Okay.
They're not all going to be obvious.
Okay.
Just like
we did.
Okay.
I understand that. Thank you.
So, tonight's score that we're ending the show with, I'm not going to tell you what it is until the next show or what it's from, but I will tell you it is by one of the Oscar nominees for Best Original Score this year that we've discussed tonight, and it's one of his first scores. So that's what we're closing off with tonight. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Roland, and thank you to Jason, who we just lost. Tune in to Oscar Oscar, blogtalkradio.com/OscarOscar. Every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. And here's our mystery movie score of the show. Thanks, guys. It's been great.
Thanks. Good night, everyone.
Bye.